Hi, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations, the weekly broadcast that we do from SPED Homeschool. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we just want to empower families to homeschool children with unique learning needs. And so each month we focus on a different topic, and this month, month of May 2021, we're going to be focusing on outdoor learning and getting outside, enjoying those outdoors. And tonight, my special guest is Justin Schell, and we are going to be talking about increasing outdoor learning experiences. And I just want to thank you for joining us, Justin, and welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Peggy. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, I am too. So if you're watching this live, and I see we have people popping on right now, if you know anybody that would be interested in this conversation and joining us and with some comments and questions, definitely share this. And just know that you can post comments and questions in the feed, whether you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or Periscope. So, because we want to be part of what we're talking about. And so, also, if you're watching us recorded, you can share too. You just can't join us live, but we would love for you to just share with those friends that are going, how do I get outside? How do I get my kids outside? We may be sharing some things tonight. I know Justin has a lot of really great ideas and some experience that he's going to pull from, and also just a lot of enthusiasm about getting outside. So, why don't we get started? So Justin, just dive in. Actually, I need to also thank our sponsor. I forgot about that. I just want to thank Knotgrass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear about halfway in a little bit about them and what they do and how they help homeschoolers. So thank you, Knotgrass History. So let's just dive in. Justin, could you share with us just what fueled your love for the outdoors and how that has kind of carried through into your adult life, family life, and just what you're doing right now?
Yeah, sure. So I guess, like a lot of people, it kind of started out with my family. We got outdoors a lot when I was younger.
That's great.
I think my parents mentioned the first time I went skiing was like three years old or something like that. And we didn't go well, but we got out there and we tried new things a lot when I was little. That kind of started to get me interested in different things. And eventually I got into scouting. I was in Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts all the way through. I got my Eagle Scout. So through that, I got a lot of different experiences, outdoors, whether it was camping or, doing whitewater rafting or climbing or all different outdoor activities, and learning a whole lot, a whole lot of skills that really I didn't, consider like learning. I just considered there are things that were fun to do and we should go do those. And I want to figure out how to do it. So I think a lot of experiences through Boy Scouts kind of got me more interested in. And then actually in high school, in my local area, there was a magnet school for science and with a focus on global ecology studies. So I applied to that and ended up getting into that. And so so I joined that program because basically they said, okay, every 6 to 8 weeks, we're actually going to leave school for the day and actually learn out in the physical environment. I learn from new places and new things. I said, great, sign me up. So I think kind of all those things, built this kind of lifelong love of nature and outdoors and finding new adventures and new things to try. So,
right. Yeah. So skiing at three, I'm assuming your parents were outdoor enthusiasts a little bit as well, because I'm not assuming at three, they didn't just send you out the door.
No, definitely came along made sure I didn't completely crash into things too often, at least. So, but yeah.
Yep. I think we underestimate kids on what they can do at those ages.
Yeah, I think we definitely do. Yeah.
Because I learned to ice skate on single blades at three. And I think nowadays we kind of hold our kids back sometimes from those experiences. And so that's a good example. The skiing at three, that's pretty risky because you just get going down that hill.
Yeah, they were watching over, you know. It's one of those things where, they give you certain constraints on your risk, and you know they'll make sure that it's somewhat appropriate to your level. I think as parents, that's kind of our job to set constraints, but to make sure that those constraints stretch us. Both as parents, just beyond our comfort level, and that kind of gets us more acclimated to what they can do and what we can allow them to do. So.
Right. It's kind of those testing those boundaries of what they can do and what they maybe need a little more work on or help on, but being there at the same time. So
absolutely.
That's a great insight. So you have a business called My School, and how have your experiences affected your family activities and then influenced your business?
Yeah. So I think from like a day-to-day standpoint for focusing on the family part, we spend a lot of time outside. Mm-hmm. We try to start our day with either a walk or just playing outside, something like that. It really kind of helps us to, start the day off right. You kind of feel fresh and rejuvenated from being outdoors. And we do that year round. So it's, just a different experience in the wintertime than it is in the summertime, and I'm up in Maryland, so we have very much four seasons, four very distinct seasons. So it's lots of different things to get used to.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're actually doing this thing called the 1,000 Hours Outside Challenge. Basically it's a woman who runs an Instagram account that has challenged everybody to get their kids to spend at least 1,000 hours outside over the course of the year.
Very cool idea.
Yeah, and it comes out to like 2 to 3 hours a day on average. So doable, but it stretches people. And we managed to exceed that throughout the winter months. And so I think we're going to make it just fine. But it is really, I think a really good challenge for people, especially I think the average number of minutes that kids spend outside is around like 40 minutes a day or something. So really stretching to 2.5 to 3 hours a day, that's like a big jump for a lot of people. So,
right. Yeah. So you may need to take it slow at first to just get your kids acclimated leads to a good question. If you do get some kickback, from kids, do you have any good ideas for how to encourage them to be outside or activities that, would keep them out a little bit longer?
Yeah, I mean, I think, some of that is just coming down to motivation, and they can be motivated by different things. And sometimes that's, just trying to pique their curiosity with something. You're like, okay, well, if you guys want to stay in here, I'm going to go check this out. And my kids are younger, so they're really curious. And they're like, oh, well, maybe I'll go check that out.
Uh-huh.
So, it's just playing those little games that kind of, motivates them through bits of curiosity or something they're interested in, or like, all right, well, I'm just going to go check this out. And that usually gets them curious enough to try it too.
Right.
You also have to get over the hurdle of the multiple layers of clothing throughout the winter.
Yes. I was going to ask about that with winter. All right. Did they have any issues? Your kids have any issues with that? Getting out?
No,
actually,
sometimes they love it and sometimes not so much, but it actually reminds me of, this quote. And I think it was, I heard it, when I was discussing Waldorf education, and the quote was something along the lines of, there's no bad weather, only bad clothing choices.
Okay. That is very true.
So, you can really prepare yourself for any different weather, and things seem, more approachable when you're prepared for
yes,
it.
Exactly.
And then also people different, tend to acclimate differently. So like if we lived in Alaska and, Northern Alaska, and the weather was usually very cold, and you'd be like, okay, well, it's -25 today. maybe we'll try to stay inside a little bit more. And here it's like, okay, well, you know, it's like below 30. So, but if people up there can do it, you know, you can too. It's just all about preparation and what you're used to and what you want to do. So
that is a very good point. Yeah. Your blood gets thicker when you live up north. We lived in Minnesota, and when we moved down to Texas, I just made fun of the Texans the first winter. I thought they are just crazy putting on parkas, and the next year I was joining them. So
I lived in South Florida for a little while, and I did the same thing. Just what you get used to. So
exactly. Yes. But it is possible. I milked a cow at 20 below, when we lived in Minnesota, and you just do it because you have to. It's part of just the wherever you live and doing the activities outside. So I applaud you for getting your kids outside and doing that. I know last night we were trying to get my daughter outside, and we're building a pool right now, and it's now occupied by frogs, that because the pool isn't quite filled with chlorine, it's got just swamp water in there, and we have all these frogs now accumulating. My husband decided he wanted to try to get a frog out, so he recruited my 16-year-old who didn't want to go outside, and he's like, come on, just hold the flashlight. So, whatever you can do to entice them to get outside for a while. Or he always knows when the satellite's going or the space station's going over, and so that'll get us. He's got a thing built onto his phone, so whenever the space station's going to head over, we all go outside and sit and watch the sky and watch that. I guess there's a meteor shower tonight, but anyways, so
I nobody told me about it.
I know, only my husband would follow those things. So if you're looking for something to do later, there's a meteor shower supposedly over North America. So anyways, lots of different ways to get outside and have some experiences. You know what? The thing that I noticed, though, as homeschoolers, we tend to be isolated. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about why it's advantageous for families to reach out to one another and develop community and learning activities with one another. Because we do have, things we do as families, but what about doing activities with other families?
Yeah, so I like to think of that as kind of breaking down into like a few different big advantages of looking to the wider community. And the first one is just, more diverse sets of knowledge. And so, I see everybody as kind of, a sum of an infinite number of moments throughout their life, all these different things that they've learned, all these different experiences they've had. And if you start with that premise, you kind of see people as, kind of view it as that you can learn something from anybody that you meet. And whether that's something around their career, something that they do every day as a job, or whether that's just like something they're passionate about, a passionate hobbyist. Those are both things that that people are often excited to talk about and to share with others if you're willing to reach out to them. And so I'll just take my wife as like an example. So she, her day job, actually, she works nights. So I guess her night job is as an obstetrician. She knows lots about science and medicine, and those kind of things. Most people don't know, unless they know her really well, that she's also a hobbyist beekeeper. We keep about 20,000 or so bees in our backyard, and these boxes that's a couple hives, and she's still fairly new to it and learning about it, but she's really passionate and excited about it, and that's contagious. We often talk about the best kind of teachers are the ones that really get you excited about learning the information.
Yes, that's so true.
So my daughter, we just got her like a little bee suit too.
Oh, cool.
And so she'll go out, she's 4 years old, and straps on this whole thing, takes her little smoker, like she owns the place, and goes out there and, helps my wife, pull the hive apart and, inspect everything and make sure that, they're growing nicely and learns a little bit about it too. And so just kind of being able to share that passion is a great thing. Those are the kind of things that we can do with other people as well.
Yes.
So that first piece is, just sharing and getting access to, really diverse sets of knowledge that are all around you don't even know about.
I
The second one is resources, and you know, whether those are physical resources from, you know, like a park nearby that, just one example that comes to mind, there's a park around the corner that actually built like a one-to-one replica wigwam and small Native American village. And so if you want to go actually see how the structure is built and, you know, see, you know, they use the same building techniques and everything. And so, you know, you can kind of read a little bit about that at home, but then you can go out and actually, you know, because you know that physical space is there, you can you know, connect with it and say, oh my gosh, you know, this is how it might feel. And so those memories kind of evoke that, you know, evoke more emotion and get those ideas to stick more deeply into your memory and really commit it to memory.
Right.
So I think access to resources is another big one. Mm-hmm. And the third one I think is when those two pieces kind of play together, and in finding different sources of knowledge and different resources, you know, you're talking to other people, and that kind of inevitably leads to, you know, these social situations. And so you can, you know, you get that socialization piece that is, especially over the last year, has been really limited for a lot of people. So you seek out groups and you seek out resources and things like that interest you, and then you can connect with people around shared interests and find, you know, the right groups for you. And really tailor that to what you need, what your kids need. So it's really good for both the parents and the kids. I think all those things kind of come together and really, you know, produce a really robust landscape that you can take advantage of if you know it exists.
Yeah, and kind of just build community based on interests or maybe what you're studying that year. Mm-hmm. So on a variety of different things, or just something that comes up that looks, well, that looks interesting. Why don't we try it?
yeah, exactly. Like I didn't know I was interested in that, but I didn't know it existed either. And now that it exists, I kind of want to check it out.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what's great about people who are passionate is, you know, they're willing to just open it up, you know, and share to people that haven't. I've had people over to try my aerial silks that some said, I want to come back. And others said, oh no, I'm never getting on that thing again.
And they learn a lot by deciding whether they wanted to or not, but
just trying it out. It's like, yeah, well, I saw people do that on videos or whatever. And so, yeah. But, you know, as you were talking, it made me think, we joined a historical society when we lived in Minnesota. And so a lot of times we would go to these historic sites, but the thing that made it so wonderful for learning was they had the reenactment actors there. And so, yes, we could walk through the buildings, but somebody who was reenacting and relating and passionate about it, because they were all volunteers, just added to that experience. And it kind of connected what you were talking about, is that resources, but the person. And we really need, we learn so well through relationships, and that is so key.
Yeah, it kind of attaches the story to it too. Mm-hmm. And you know, learning through stories and, we're kind of hardwired, I guess, evolutionarily, you know, to really to be able to learn from and to, you know, remember stories very well. So so you can learn people's stories and really build a relationship, and those can be really advantageous for you know, building those memories and lasting memories.
Yeah, that is so true. Yeah, those things anchor into our brains, and our kids remember those things, and much better than, like you said, you just read about in a book. But when you stand in the middle of that wigwam, all of a sudden you have a relationship and you know the space. We went and did the Little House on the Prairie tour, and we saw what the dugout looked like in the one book, and it was so small. You know, you think, oh, it had to be a bigger hole, but it really wasn't. And that lasting impression of people lived in this for like a whole winter with each other, and we're complaining about COVID.
Sometimes it helps to really, you know, refocus your right. mind. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
New perceptions around things.
Yeah, it's so true. So can you share maybe some stories with us from your own experience and families you've worked with to further develop just some, I guess maybe even for those that are sitting on the fence going, well, this sounds really good, but, you know, how do we do this? And how do we make this work for our family? You know, we have a lot of families who have kids with special needs, and sometimes that's a lot of effort to get out the door. But I think with the proper motivation, a lot of us can get out the door, but we need that extra little nudge,
yeah.
per se.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of that comes down to just, you know, finding somebody that's more comfortable in those situations, who has, you know, that knowledge mm-hmm. that can help you kind of realign, you know, your risk tolerance. You're like, okay, well, at least this person knows what's going on. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm going into this situation, you know, with no knowledge about going in the outdoors, how to pack, how to do any of these things.
That's true.
You know, at least we're going along with somebody that does know that mm-hmm. and relay that information. So, and there's actually a group like that. So I met a couple, talked to them, I guess, a couple weeks ago, and they're not too far from me. They they have a lot of years of experience as firefighters and paramedics. And they're just, you know, big outdoor enthusiasts. You know, the husband, he was an Eagle Scout as well. And so he probably had a lot of that, same motivation growing up, mm-hmm. but they're a very outdoorsy family. And so they started an organization called Emergency Response Training, mm-hmm. where they kind of put all those passions and those things that they've learned from their careers all together. And so they do like youth survival classes for kids.
Oh, cool.
So they'll, you know, take them out and show them how to pack for camping, for hiking, things like that. Mm-hmm. Prepare, you know, when they get out there, they'll show them how to build a shelter, how to, you know, build a fire, how to cook over the fire, how to do first aid and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, if you don't know anything about it, you know, those are great, you know, fairly inexpensive, like crash courses on,
right.
you know, how to do this. And then like, we'll actually get you out there and show you how to do it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that can kind of give you the confidence and the knowledge that you need to at least have a point to start. So, that was a really cool organization. I talked to another homeschool dad, I guess, last week, and you know, his name is Jake, and he's always had an interest in reptiles. His wife has a background in biology, and so, you know, they combined these efforts and created an organization called My Three Chambered Heart. Which, until I found the organization, I didn't realize that most reptiles only have three chambers in their hearts. So two atria and one ventricle. I had no idea. And, I also learned the word herpetology, which is, you know, the study of reptiles. And all of these things I've just learned in the last week from chatting with Jake.
That's really cool.
And I haven't even been to the classes that they run.
Uh-huh.
So they have, they have a number of snakes and lizards and turtles. And he said if everything goes well with their permits, they'll even have a crocodile soon.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they travel around and they give, you know, they teach at their local, like a homeschool resource center that is mm-hmm. nearby them. And then to other organizations, they do go to shows and things that allow people to meet and touch and become more familiar and more comfortable around reptiles. And, you know, a lot of people have these fears of snakes. And so
yes.
and that uh-huh. might be like, I really don't know about it, but maybe I'll learn a little bit about it. And maybe that'll give me a little bit, you know, more context
yeah.
to say
yep.
whether we mm-hmm. should be afraid of this and what we should watch out for.
Right.
So
and maybe as a parent having the fear, but allowing your kids to interact without you having to be the one holding it
or
getting it as a pet.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I remember pushing my parents for a pet snake a lot when I was little, never happened.
No. Okay. they held out.
Yeah. That's totally fair. I think I feel that way about my kids now. So,
yeah.
yeah. But I think not all those things are science related too. So, I was talking to a woman last week, and you know, she's used to be an educator in a public school, and then you know stepped away to homeschool her daughter, and she's also just really passionate about early literacy and gardening.
That's
and she's like, why don't I just put those together? So she formed what's called the Reading Garden Club, and so she invites parents and kids to come and they learn early literacy skills. Mm-hmm. And so it's both teaching the kids those skills, but also teaching the parents how to provide those skills. And so you kind of get, it's like a education double whammy there. So uh-huh. you're just learning how, they're learning something and you're learning how to teach them more. Yeah. Really good opportunities for anything in the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And then one other thing comes to mind, and I think you had a woman named Abby Rinella back on.
Yes, she was on in December.
Mm-hmm. And that was a very interesting interview. The nonprofit she runs, I think is, what's it called? Called Beyond?
Yes.
I remember.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically facilitating outdoor adventures mm-hmm. for special needs families.
Yes.
And so there's, they kind of combine their passions and their knowledge and put it into this effort. And, mm-hmm. Lots of families are out there doing those kind of things, but they're very hard to find.
Yes.
And, so that's kind of one of the things that we're trying to solve is to just make those opportunities mm-hmm. easier for people to find.
Yeah. And connecting with each other. That's so important. And it is, as soon as people start homeschooling, their first question is, well, how do I find curriculum? But then is, how do I find a group? How do I connect with other people? And those should be your first questions, but that how do I connect is sometimes really difficult because there's either, groups focused on just like, we'll teach your kids, you drop them off, but that's not really connecting. Mm-hmm. But people really want community and that's what they're looking for. I applaud you for what you're doing with my school and connecting families with those types of activities. I was, as you were talking, sometimes things like Boy Scouts, you were talking about, just if dads don't know how to camp, but that sometimes teaches the dad how to camp as well as the son.
Yeah.
And my husband was involved in Civil Air Patrol for a long time, and they teach a lot of survival skills as well to students and a lot of other things. So there's organizations out there that can really help with connecting and more, not even homeschool related, but a lot of homeschoolers use them for various things. So, yeah.
And so whether they're just families or whether they're, formal organizations, there's, mm-hmm. there's all these different resources right around that you can, take advantage of the things that they can offer and that can add a lot to your family and to their education. So.
Yes. Yeah. That is very true. So, well, we're going to take a quick break because we're about halfway through our broadcast. So I'm going to let Justin pop off the screen for just a minute here. And we're going to hear from our sponsor, Not Grass History. So stay tuned because Justin has a lot of really good things to share just about connecting and how do we do that in this new era that we're living in. So I'll have you back in just a while. And I want to thank Not Grass History for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. I'm going to just read a little bit about Not Grass History, their curriculum that gives parents a flexible set of tools that you can adjust to meet the needs of each student in your family. They use a readable typeface in their books, making reading easier for students and parents. Hundreds of full-color photographs and illustrations provide a rich experience for visual learners. All the courses include hands-on activity ideas for students who like to write, draw, build, and create. Marilyn from Pennsylvania says this about Not Grass History. It is such a delight to see my son retain and enjoy history, especially as he has learning disabilities that make it difficult to retain information. Your curriculum is one of our victories. You can try Not Grass History for free. Yes, I said free. See how it works for your family by visiting their website, notgrass.com. And if you also would like to know, we've just done a whole bunch of unboxings and video reviews on our YouTube channel. So you can check out the review crew playlist and find those there. So thank you, Not Grass, for sponsoring this episode. And we're going to bring Justin back and so we have a question to start our next half an hour. So welcome back, Justin. Are you ready for a question from, I guess it's from a viewer on Periscope. Nancy asks, where do I look for resources around where we live? So that maybe just be a general question. How do we even start that process of looking for resources and connecting with homeschoolers?
Sure. I think, that kind of, gets to the center of what my school is and what it can do. Mm-hmm. So just to tell you a little bit about it, our main goal is to provide people with three main things. And the first one is the ability to find people to meet, so other homeschoolers to meet, mm-hmm. Places to go, and things to do. And so that kind of hits that places to go thing, and what kind of resources are right around you. So my school is a platform that anybody can go on and either say that, I'm a local resource that people can use. These are the kind of things you can learn here from my organization. Or you can go on and just say, suggest a spot. And, this is some local spot that it might be a museum or it might be a co-op, it might be a nature center or a park or anything like that. And you can say, this is a place that we love to go. This is why we'd like to go there, and provide a little information about it and the address, and it'll plop it on the map. And so you can challenge your local, Facebook group or your local organization and say, hey, if everybody goes and puts on a few resources that they know, mm-hmm. that'll start to build the local learning landscape right around your area.
Yes.
And really, you can access that diverse set of knowledge that your local community has in order to build out that map. So that's kind of, one way I think you would just go about finding those if you don't know what's out there. It's just to reach out to the community and in any ways you have, whether that's Facebook groups or whether that's email groups or whether that's a physical organization you belong to or a co-op or what it might be. Just challenge them, bring them all to the table.
I just want to let people know, if they're listening to the podcast, that your website is myschoolathome.io, because they won't be able to see the screen. But if you're watching, you can see the website down below us. So yeah, but that's great that you offer that, because it gets to be so confusing, and then you wonder how far away from me is that. But if it's on a map, then you can easily access that and figure out those things. Because somebody says they're in Houston here, they could be 2 hours away from me. instead of just in my maybe they're in my neighborhood. I don't know, but yeah. So that's a good resource to have. So thank you for asking that question. And if you have a question or comment and you'd like us to build that into our conversation, we welcome you to do that. So we are live right now on Facebook and YouTube, as well as Periscope. And also, speaking of links, Justin has shared with me a bunch of links for different things on his website. And if you're watching on the YouTube channel, those are already in the description. So you can just click on those right there instead of having to try to enter that information in off the screen. So that's helpful. But I'd love to start this time talking about maybe some research to consider for parents who still may not be convinced to get out of their comfort zones to connect with others, especially in light of, the COVID restrictions and concerns. What do you have to share with us on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of research on, learning outside and then learning with other people. I gave a talk about socialization specifically at a recent virtual conference. Due to COVID, everything's kind of
online. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's advantage to that in the long run, we'll see. But but there is a lot of research about the importance of going outside and learning outside and learning with other people outside. And the big one that comes up a lot of the time, first off, is just the fact that your body needs that sunlight to,
yes.
produce vitamin D. And then it's a lot of advantages, from a physical standpoint, because your body requires that for a lot of processes like bone development, immune system health, and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
So just getting out and just being in the sunlight can be advantageous.
Yeah.
another thing is exercise, for your physical well-being, getting out and just having the kids run around for long periods of time. It's easy to do and gets them out there for long periods of time, exploring, and you don't have to focus on exercise. It's just kind of a byproduct of getting them outside. Mm-hmm. Another big one I think is around unstructured play, and you can do that inside, but it's really, there's a lot of advantage to doing it outdoors. Both the fact that there's less rules because there's not as many things you're going to break. Mm-hmm. there's more space. Was that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I said that's so true. Yes. We have.
Yeah,
a padded room or some kind of like sensory room where our kids can just kind of bounce off the walls. It makes it difficult in your living space to do types of activities.
That reminds me, my wife sent me a saying the other day, and I don't know where it's from, but she said, they can't be bouncing off the walls if you take the walls away.
That's very true.
I thought that was a really nice articulation of that. So, that unstructured play is really, really good for a whole range of kids, especially in the early years, but all the way up through adolescence, helps to develop self-regulation, planning and prioritization skills, troubleshooting in different situations. This will kind of all be lumped under this umbrella of that is known as executive functioning skills.
Yes.
And if anyone's not familiar, that's kind of often described as like the air traffic controller of the brain. Mm-hmm. It takes in information, figures out what other information has to be taken from your memory and from your knowledge to adapt to that situation, and then figure out how to deal and how to negotiate with this. And so that keeps on developing for a lot of years, and that unstructured play provides a huge advantage to the development of that system. So, that's a big one that gets pointed to a lot as well. Mm-hmm. Then risk taking, and risk is something we kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, but it helps to stretch people to beyond their comfort zone, and stretching beyond your comfort zone means you're learning new things. That's like a good slight discomfort range.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can actually, get beyond that and, accomplish whatever your goal is, that can help provide that self-confidence. And so we can get all those things from just learning to manage risk and figure out how to deal with that and negotiate those situations. Specifically in the science realm, I think, if we think about science as the study of the physical world, then it makes sense to get out and explore and to develop a relationship with the physical world. Mm-hmm. You can only get so much by reading about things. I think that's an important aspect, but then actually going out and physically seeing them, that provides a very different experience, and something that if you really want to develop a lifelong love of the outdoors, you really need to create that relationship with the outdoors. And so that's really important part of it.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking about, I was just thinking, how my kids often mention, some movies, they're like, well, that defies the law of physics, because they've been outside enough. They know what, something would do if it was flipped around and turned around, and yet, AI, the graphics in some movies doesn't actually show you what it would do. And but the more you have those experiences, the more you go, that's just off. And you don't have to like think about it. It's just it.
I've seen that before, and that's not how that happens.
Right, exactly. But it's not like you can like read a textbook and get that knowledge. It's something you have to gain from experience. I totally get that experience related to learning. And I love that, you talk about just the risk factor and allowing kids, to kind of go towards that edge, that, you know, with under control. But I think we live in a society where we want to protect our kids so much. Can you talk a little bit about that? And just how as a parent do we do that? And kind of get past allowing our kids maybe to stumble and fall and to make those mistakes, but, you know, definitely within a semi-controlled environment, at least.
Yeah, and I think you just kind of, you know, you have to realize that the stakes are fairly low, you know, in that situation mm-hmm. where they're going to get outdoors. And yes, they might, you know, fall down, they might get a bruise, they might get a cut, things like that. Mm-hmm. But those are situations that they need to start negotiating, you know, early on, and so that they can, you know, further develop in whatever variables might get thrown their way. And the outdoor environment is providing, you know, all kinds of additional variables all the time for us to adapt to.
Uh-huh.
And whether you're just, you know, even if you're in the same place, there's mm-hmm. differences from day to day. But if you're out in a new environment, yeah. you know, even if it's not that far from your house, you're going to experience, you know, very new things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether that's from a physical standpoint, just getting used to running over rocks and jumping over logs, mm-hmm. things like that. I mean, like, That's an environment that if you're, you know, stuck in the city all the time and you're mm-hmm. only on flat roads, you're not physically developing you're not getting used to, you know,
right.
jumping from rock to rock mm-hmm. and things like that. And so from a physical development, from a cognitive and from, you know, that idea about executive functioning, from all those mm-hmm. standpoints, it really, there's a lot of advantages to getting out there and just learning those things. And so, you know, some of it is just, you know, saying, okay, well, worst case scenario, they're going to get a little banged up from this.
Right.
We'll see how this goes. And then, you know, just try to hold it in as long as you can. You know?
Uh-huh, exactly.
And then maybe that will stretch you just far enough where you can be like, oh, okay,
mm-hmm.
they did really well at this. We'll stretch a little further. So, you know, you're both stretching them and stretching yourself mm-hmm. at the same time. You know,
right.
But yeah, just as long as you're in a situation where, you know, overall the risk isn't, you know, that big, it's really just a good idea to just give them the opportunity to try to figure out how to negotiate those situations on their own. And then they can come back to you if they need help, when they need help,
mm-hmm.
And you can help them figure out a way to do it. But, you know, give them the time to try to work it out. There's a lot of advantages to doing that. So
true. Yes, it's scary. I think a lot of times parents ask me, you know, well, what do you think about that with your kids doing this? My kids at one point in Minnesota, we lived on a lake, and it was a huge, it was like 40 steps down to the lake, and we got enough snow. They built a bobsled track and then launched themselves off the end of the dock onto the lake. And I was like, I just don't look.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta put them out to sea. Yeah.
Exactly. They know where to find me if they need something. And so when you're growing up, did you have any of those experiences?
Probably too many. I think, yeah, that would be a better question for my parents than
yeah.
how many near heart attacks I gave them. But plenty of that. I used to try. You know, I climbed every tree we found and
mm-hmm.
every rock face we found, and I was a big climber. I only fell down maybe once or twice. You know, got the wind knocked out of me.
Uh-huh.
Scary situation, but I was
yeah.
like, okay, I got the wind back. Let's try it again. You know?
Yeah.
And I think it was far scarier for, you know, my parents than it was for me in the long run. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, that climbing has really. Is something that I still love to do and
mm-hmm.
would love to do more with my kids when
yeah.
I can get over that fear.
Right. Yeah. You just don't look down.
But, yep.
Yeah, exactly. The more you do it, it gets easier. So, yeah.
I'll find a good experience group to, you know, take us
yes,
out on that.
Exactly. Or join one of those climbing gyms, and then you'll have partners, and maybe there'll be a homeschool group, and yeah, you can get them signed up on your website and
exactly.
And they can help you with all those tricky. Yes. I've done some rock climbing and it's when you start going upside down. I know I was in a competition once. I was racing against this guy and he was leaping from one to the other. I'm like, okay, I've lost. I can't do that. Anyways, so Nancy again from Periscope said their challenge is finding organizations that allow for it's a behavior program, BCBA, to support our children. So you're looking more for like a program where that would be incorporated, probably something more like a co-op, and that is difficult. I just have to let you know that there's very few. I think I've only heard of one or two groups that they have incorporated therapy in with the homeschool co-op. A lot of times it's just too difficult, or there isn't enough of a population. And so I just encourage you to keep looking and maybe start connecting with other parents who have kids with similar needs. And, you know, we create things out of the necessity. And so, I mean, that's what SPED Homeschool started out with. And I know, Justin, you're trying to create a community so your kids have people to relate to as you homeschool them. So we just do those things to get connected and create the communities that we want for ourselves as well as for others. So I as we're wrapping up, I just love for you to tell us more about my school and how families can connect with you and your services so that so they can find you easily.
Yeah, sure. So I think a little earlier I mentioned, you know, we kind of do three things, and that's to help homeschoolers find people to meet, places to go, and things to do. So I'll just kind of go through each one of those.
Yeah,
the people to meet, basically you come on the site and we operate kind of like a social network for homeschoolers. Mm-hmm. And so you can create a personal profile. And if you want to, you can drop your personal profile on the map and say, you know, hey, we live somewhere around here. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't store addresses. We don't, you can modify your location to where you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So it's in your general area so that people can know, you know,
right.
I'm in this area. I'm looking for other people in this area.
Got it.
And so, you know, you can connect people, connect with other people directly mm-hmm. just by looking for other profiles and, you know, of people who have also opted to be on the map.
Oh, great.
So that's, you know, much more prevalent in the Maryland DC area. Just that's where we started. And that's where we've grown, you know, for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But really, if you want to, you know, go invite anybody else onto the site, those are all things you can just go on and do for free. All you have to do is sign
mm-hmm.
up. And so the second part, the places, you know, that's what I was mentioning before, is just to reach out to your local community. You can go start to build the local landscape and just by adding points to the map, you know, these are the places I love to learn, where other people's places people love to learn. And you can kind of organize it all with the map and see what's around you and say, you know, these are the places that, you know, that I can go to. These are the resources in my community that I can take advantage of.
Cool.
And, you know, these are all the things that we can learn. And so as people, you know, add more and more things to the map, then you can kind of, you know, use the search bar and, you know, tailor it down to the exact needs. So the more options that people bring to the table, the mm-hmm. you know, more specific you can get with what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And so that's the places aspect. And then the third, and I think the third is the part that excites me the most about getting people together is mm-hmm. You know, the things to do. And those can be, if you sign up as either a personal profile looking for other people, or you sign up as an organization on the map, as a spot, as a resource that people can use,
mm-hmm.
You can host events and you can, so, you know, that might be something that's more informal, like a meetup. If mm-hmm. you're looking just for other parents with a, you know, a similar, you know, kids around a similar age or around a similar interest mm-hmm. or things like that. Hey, mm-hmm. we're meeting up at this park just for a, you know, a park day. And you can organize one of those. You just basically fill it out, it drops it on the map, and you're like, anybody else, you know, who wants to check it out can come, and they can register right through the site. And so you can find out a little bit about everybody coming. And then it also gives you a list of those people that came so that you can reach out afterwards. Like, oh, I you know, meant to talk to this person more, but
right.
you know, I didn't get their contact information. Well,
yeah.
Now you have everybody that came, and so you can reach back out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it tries to, you know, kind of leverage some of the tools of the online world to
mm-hmm.
to really give us the tools to, that we need to, you know, communicate better.
Right.
But they can also be educational. You know, you can host classes or field trips. And so just as an example, next week, my family's hosting a field trip to a local, they're called the Conservation Society of Micropedae, which I wasn't aware of beforehand, but apparently that's the family that kangaroos and wallabies belong to.
Oh,
so you can go and learn about them and actually, you know, physically interact with the kangaroos and wallabies that they have on site. And so we thought that was really cool. And, you know, they can take 12 people. And so we said, great, you know, anybody who wants to come with us, we created an event on there and people can come do that. Actually, interesting thing about that group, they are moving to Texas in a few weeks.
Really?
So we're one of the last people who's going to get a tour in this area. But then we'll make sure they drop a point over there where they move to in Texas. I think they're just going to be a little bit north of the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, seems totally worth the drive. I've never experienced meeting a kangaroo before, so I'm quite excited.
Yes.
And my daughter hasn't stopped talking about it since we mentioned it. So,
oh, funny.
So it's, you know, it's kind of bringing those, all those different pieces together to meet people, you know, find new places to learn and, you know, find different ways to learn with other people. You know, that's where you're really taking advantage of, you know, of the knowledge of other people around you and putting the resources that they have available. They invite other people to join them for those experiences. So,
awesome. Yeah. So again, if you're listening and you can't see the screen, it's myschoolathome.io that Justin's talking about. And you'll want to just, I encourage you to do what he said to get your information on there and to start sharing with people that you know that homeschool and getting local information on there, because that's it's a great way to connect that that can help you find one another instead of just a group where you get things get lost in the feed and you just can't, you can't, or like where was that person who said that they live near me, and then try to do a search and you just can't find it. But yeah, those personal interactions and then having those events and being able to meet each other and then be able to connect back online. Because usually when we're doing those things, we're so crazy busy with kids. We don't always remember to even share each other's names. It's like, oh yeah, that was that family with, but yeah, so that's like just an awesome resource that you've developed. And I went on today and registered to Sped Homeschool. So I have to tell you, it's a super easy interface to use. I told Justin, I said he did a good job. So it's really simple to fill out, get your information on there and get going. So so kudos to you for that. So yeah. But I don't know if we have any more questions or comments as we are wrapping up. Is there anything else that you'd like to share, Justin?
I think I just, you know, like to invite anybody that wants to check it out. You know, we're very open to feedback. So if you check anything out, you're like, I wish I could do this, or, you know, I also have this problem. You know, can you guys help me solve that? Those are really the things we like to tackle. And you know, the more feedback we get, the more we can, you know, plan what features to build out for different people to solve different problems. And that's really what we're looking to do. So, so yeah, if anybody wants to reach out, info@myschoolathome.io. I read all those emails that come in. So you get a response directly from me. And so I just invite people to check it out and let us know what you think.
Great. Yeah. And we'll start posting the conferences that we're going to be at there. So parents know how to connect with us, and we're going to be starting family camps hopefully this fall. So that'd be a great way to a place to share as well for those things. But yeah, so much now that people are getting out and about, it's a great time. I know you started this when COVID started and you've been so patient, but I was speaking at a real conference this last week, and people are just desperate to connect with other people and just have conversations and be around one another again. So it's exciting times. So thank you for creating this resource, and I look forward to seeing how it grows.
Thank you very much, Peggy. I appreciate the chat today, and I really had a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was great. I just want to thank all of our viewers too for joining us, and also for our sponsor, Nutgrass History, for sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. Definitely check out their website. Like I said, they have free software, or not free software, but they have free curriculum that you can try out. They have free samples of every single curriculum that they have on their website. So you can download those PDFs and try them out. And so lots of great parent helps too that our reviewers can tell you about. So check out them at notgrass.com. And I'm trying to remember what we're talking about tomorrow. Oh, I have a return guest. Dr. Daniel Franklin will be back. And he's going to talk about creating successful outdoor learning experiences. And so how do you teach and make sure your kids learn what you'd like them to learn? And so we're going to be continuing talking about outdoor learning, and hopefully continuing to encourage you to get outside. Like Justin was saying, there's so many advantages to us getting outside. And I love that challenge that you were talking about. Just that little bit adds up as we spend our time outside with our kids. So yeah, well, thanks again, Justin, for your time. I appreciate it and all that you had to share with us. I wish you success with my school and everything that hopefully there's a lot of people connecting over the summer and into the fall.
Hopefully. Thank you very much, Peggy.
Yeah, you are welcome. I think we have one more. Somebody wanted to know, can I ask the meaning of SPED? SPED stands for Specialized Education. So we know that some kids just needed their curriculum, their teaching tweaked, and those are unique learners. And so we call it SPED homeschool. So that's where that came from. And so, yeah, it is. But we've kind of changed our tagline a little bit to empowering, because parents need to be empowered when they're teaching struggling learners. And I think one of my guests at one point said 70% of kids can contort themselves to fit into any type of curriculum or any type of learning experience. It's those 30% that we have to change the environment. We have to change the way we teach and the materials we use. And so those are the parents, the families that we are supporting. And even as I told parents last week, I was talking about creative curriculum, is even typical kids, they get sick of contorting themselves sometimes. And so what Justin was talking about with getting kids out and playing, that's their natural learning environment. It puts your mind at rest, but you can still learn. And so, so what a better time when the weather's getting good, get outside. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Erica, for your question. And thank you, Justin, again, for joining us. And thank you all again for joining us on Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And we will see you next week, right here, same time, same places. Bye, everybody.